Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Richard Rossi Live, and there's sadness today over comic genius Oscar winner Robin Williams passing. It was shocking news. My wife and I heard yesterday, and I felt my eyes mist up hearing the news about Robin Williams. I felt sad and on the threshold of crying when I heard the report. We had messages pouring in to us then. We created an artistic community, Eternal Grace, here that is a spiritual support system for artists and writers and comics and actors. And a lot of our artist friends are of a creative temperament. And today I want to talk, really address the elephant in the room, because the mainstream media has done a good job of trying to keep us abreast of facts. They recently had a press conference at 11 a.m. Pacific time this morning, Lieutenant Keith Boyd giving us the information that it was an apparent suicide by hanging. And there's a desire on the part of those who love Robin to focus on the wonderful life he lived and the wonderful work he did, and that's the legacy he leaves behind. But the elephant in the room from some of our artist friends who, like Robin, have similar issues and temperaments, depression, mood swings, creative periods followed by depression, we've had some really sad calls. It's kind of shaking up those of us who are in the creative arts and feel vulnerable to these kind of depressive periods. And people are asking us why. Why was he depressed? And so we'd like to talk this morning. We're going to really get in depth about and give some real understanding. I think information would be helpful about depression, suicide, and the artistic temperament. There was a book called Touched with Fire, Kay Redfield Jamison, that came out a few years ago about how such a high percentage of folks who are comedians, poets. The University of Iowa said 80% of writers, artists met the diagnostic criteria for major mood disorder, vulnerability to suicide, bipolar 1 or bipolar 2. We have bipolar illness in my own family, and I'm very familiar with it. My father suffered bipolar 1. I've had therapists tell me that I'm probably bipolar 2, and bipolar 2, the difference between bipolar 1 is that medication's necessitated and there's more hospitalizations. Bipolar 2, the high creative periods can lead to real creative, a flurry of creative activity followed by depression, but can be dealt with through cognitive therapy and medication as and as necessary. It's not quite as bad because the creative period is, you're able to do a lot of really good work, whereas in bipolar 1, the manic episode, it just gets really crazy and out of reality. But many studies have been done that people with high improvisational ability, great writers, great improvisational comics and actors, and those that there's a disproportionate level of addiction, suicidal tendencies. If you go even through history and look at some of the great writers, Ernest Hemingway committed suicide. And I'm not here to do a depressing show, but I think it's worth really talking about. Virginia Woolf, another great writer, Sylvia Plath, of course, the great painter, Vincent van Gogh. So people like Robin Williams and other creative artists feel things so intensely. They're sponges. You know, Robin, when he would go into his improvisational comedy when he was starting out in San Francisco, was just all these things he was a shy kid and he watched a lot of TV, and all these things he absorbed as a sponge just would come out, and just so incredible. But that kind of sensitivity has a price. And there's other artists that had suicidal attempts you don't hear about. Sinatra himself, when he was depressed over his breakup with Ava Gardner, slit his wrist, rushed to the hospital. He was down to a skeleton, and he wrote a song, I'm a Fool to Want You, and it was just in total despondency over Ava Gardner. So for those of us that have had depression, have been in the threshold of that thing where you've lost the will to live, it's really hard to understand if you've not been there. But in that type of clinical depression, it really is hard to fight. And, you know, to the religiously judgmental that sometimes condemn the suicidal person, I remember when I was in Bible school, they used to glibly dismiss suicide as, suicide is the ultimate act of selfishness. You don't care how it hurts everyone around you. And on the surface, yeah, it does appear selfish or narcissistic. But the person that is in the throes of that kind of clinical depression, but by the grace of God, go I, if you've never been there, and if you have an ounce of understanding of this kind of temperament, the creative temperament, then there's no condemnation. Just briefly, my own memories of, and by the way, our phone number is 347-637-2379. We'll open up the lines shortly in about 7 minutes or so. But my own memory, I remember when Mork and Mindy came out, of course that's when a lot of us first saw Robin, I was in 10th grade. I was attending Vincentian Catholic High School in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And I remember after the first episode, at lunch in the cafeteria, my friend Jeff and I were talking about, oh my God, did you see that show? You know, Mork, you know, he was so great and such a brilliant comedian. And I remember Jeff and I just talking about how amazed we were by his talent. And he's touched us. He's really touched our lives. There was one film he did that was really intriguing of a spiritual nature. A lot of his work was of a spiritual nature. Patch Adams showed how laughter heals us. The Bible says, merry heart doeth good like a medicine. In Proverbs 17:22. And I thought of a poem called The Clown's Prayer when I heard of Robin's death. I'll read it to you. As I stumble through life, help me to create more laughter than tears, dispense more cheer than gloom, and spread more cheer than despair. Never let me be so indifferent that I will fail to see the wonder in the eyes of a child or the twinkle in the eyes of the aged. Never let me forget my total effort is to cheer people, make them happy, and forget momentarily all the unpleasantness in their lives. And I love this concluding stanza. And in my final moment, may I hear you whisper, when you made my people smile, you made me smile. Robin Williams passed away at 63, and he sure made us smile, didn't he?
Love Talk Radio.
So we're going to go to the phones momentarily, and I'm just kind of broken up thinking about Robin. He did a film called, I think it was What Dreams May Come, where heaven is kind of things that you like. You know, it's something you create. In other words, everyone's experience of heaven is just a little bit different based on what they want. It was just an incredible film, an incredible concept. And, you know, I like there's a phrase in the evangelical world I like, which is accepting the Lord as your own personal Savior, that there's a personal aspect to that relationship with God. And I like the film Robin did, that heaven is kind of personal. There's some personal things that you like there. And if I, as a person who has had bipolar disorder, depression in our family, can have grace and understanding and compassion for Robin, and then I'm sure God in his infinite love and wisdom has grace and forgiveness and mercy for Robin. And, you know, how his life ended is one part of the picture, but the larger picture is the fact that God gave him this talent and he shared it. He did something with that talent. He shared it with the military. He was like the Bob Hope of our generation, you know, going to the USO shows and entertaining the troops. He was a very generous spirit, very sensitive spirit. He battled addiction. He battled depression. And this is a requiem for this wonderful clown prince. We're opening up the phone lines now at 347-637-2379. 347-637-2379. We're going to go to line one, and I believe this is a therapist friend of mine, Dr. Joe. Are you there, Dr. Joe?
Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you, Dr. Joe, and I want to thank you so much for calling in. I know this is all short notice, and, Dr. Joe, I've had calls and messages coming in because, we have a network of artists, and a lot of my artist friends do suffer clinical depression, bipolar disorder, highly creative, talented people, in some cases even celebrities that that people be shocked to know have been right where Robin is, to someone that's really feeling sad or has had this same kind of history and is, fearful that, I could succumb to this kind of suicide as well. I feel that whole domino feeling of sadness from this. What are your thoughts, I know, as a therapist and as a person who helps people?
Well, I think it's going to be important that we're trying to find meaning right now to the impact of Robin's life and the impact that that's had on us. And, as an educator, philosopher, writer, psychotherapist, I was profoundly impacted and influenced by Robin Williams' roles in Deadfoot Society and Good Will Hunting. And he had such a deep, expansive emotional bandwidth and a real reservoir, which made his acting ability authentically reach out, connect so deeply and touched and moved all of us at our deepest in those untouchable parts of our soul. And that really helped me even digging out of me the untapped inspiration to help me reach higher, in hope and a vision, a version of what I wanted to see in me and actually begin to consider some of the more higher spiritual realms of infinite possibility. And I still even ponder what dreams may come. And I knew that he was a man who suffered, like me, the dark nights of the soul and who had really gone through, some of the hot fire of the crucible and the alchemist that God puts us through. But he didn't waste his pain, And that's what's amazing about that man is he got us to laugh and cry. And we knew that he wasn't acting, but rather revealing his humanity, the light and the shadow and the depths of his soul to us in the world. And I think for all of us that are suffering and that are going into that, yes, we need to really connect and get resource and help and, go to God, but also make sure we're connecting to, staying with our, psychotherapist or psychiatrist and getting helpful help and staying resourced in that so we can be healthy and stay safe. But also, I think, Richard, I think all of this is finding meaning for ourselves and finding ways to integrate that into our lives and find greater purpose and meaning and all that, because that's the overflow of Robin's heart. He was able to speak to us from his pain and communicate and connect to us in ways that a lot of actors couldn't do. And I want to encourage people to really not be afraid of this, but to really connect to the meaning so that they're able to, get in there and have that. And because we can be really afraid right now. We're trying to seek meaning and comfort for all those different areas that we're scared. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it really does make sense. And thanks for your own vulnerability about, going through the same kind of dark night of the soul. Why do you think it is that people that are creatively gifted tend to, do you think they suffer this more so than, the average person working at the cubicle farm that, is a stockbroker? And if so, why do you think that's true?
Well, I really think these creative types are really connected. They're really connected to their emotions, their body, and sometimes we grow up. I grew up, the creative type, and I was grew up with family that, were more doers than seers and more, more cognitive than emotional. And so we walk around sometimes with judgment and shame and, you know, and shame's the name of the game, and we blame. And so we don't, a lot of times, us creative part, parts of us, you know, really get disavowed and disconnected from, and there's a judgment around our creativity and shame. And so we don't really allow that to come out and get connected. And, yeah, so these guys, they're just, and I think for a lot of us that are the more creative type, it's learning to go, you know, begin to identify the wounding, the shame, but learning to step into more of an acceptance rather than a judgment and a shame of what's occurring, so that we can get into the crucible of that work and really look at the fire of those things, different things, so that we can grow and really look at that as an opportunity to grow and connect. Because a lot of people are just shut down today, numbed out, disconnected, isolated, and alone, because they're not connected to themselves and all those emotional parts that just make them so passionate, which is awesome. But finding that as a gift that God has given you, it truly is a gift to connect to people. And sometimes us creative part people, we just don't, people, the task people, the doers of the world don't get us sometimes. Not that we're special, but that we're, you know, that we have this gift that we're trying to make sense of and integrate and make whole and integrate into the type of work we do and all that type of stuff. So there's a lot more here, I think, moving that from the unconscious to the conscious and being more aware. And also, because I think people that are creative, because they tend to shut down or isolate and alienate, they don't really create the connections sometimes that they really need. And I just want to encourage people that are out there right now suffering to kind of move, to try to find ways to get into a group, get into connection, get into community, get resourced, and really start talking about the pain and shame points, because that's the material that's so good and awesome that God's given you that can really transform and really integrate into amazing, you know, work that you do as an artist or, you know, an actor or whatever. So, but definitely stay resourced, get help, you know, in the areas that you can get help in. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it sure does. You mentioned how the artistic person can be shamed by the doers, and that's so true.
Yeah.
You know, they'll give them the speech about, you know, your income's up and down as an artist, why don't you get a real 9-to-5 job, or they might just mock them for being different or whatever, and that can oftentimes, as you said, exacerbate this isolation. What would you say to the creative artist that has really been shamed by the kind of conventional people around them to the point of feeling, you know, like an outcast, isolated? You know, there's a song by this singer-songwriter, Daniel Johnston, about the portrait of an artist, and he talks about how they're all laughing at him, go get a job, and why are you so different?
Yeah, right.
What would you say to the creative person that has, you know, really become an outsider, so to speak, and how to handle that shaming that goes on?
Yeah. Well, it's so, I mean, I had to reframe a lot of my shaming for my family growing up. My father, because I was a creative type, I was a beer, and I was a creative, and they're doers. And I, you know, one of my friends, it reframed, he goes, Joe, you were just a guy trying to get in touch with your higher self. You weren't just some, you know, but because what happens is we let people define our stakes. We have our boundaries, and it's learning to have healthy boundaries. But really getting a sense of who am I, where am I going, what do I stand for, what do I fight for, what's my higher purpose, instead of allowing other people to define that space, because we have a created intent, a gift, something that is uniquely ours. You know, that is, it is nobody else, but that's who we are, and that's how we show up in the world, and that's our gift to the world. But when we get around other people that are confused or maybe not really get us, you know, there's judgment and shame, and because they need the little tight, small little control box. And so, but we need to get around people that are really for us and that really want to support that and really see that space. But we got to generate that from within and really get into accepting our true gift, our creative intent. And then be also, as we're going out there and putting that out there, I mean, we do have to have a little bit more of a muscle and setting some boundaries, and we're sensitive, we're shame-based in a lot of ways, but that's also a gift, you know, looking at that. But learning to be passionately detached, where you know who you are, what you're about, but then not being attached to outcomes, and also not allowing other people to define you or to define that space, because who do we really only get defined by? God. God is the only person, the only entity that gets to define our created intent, our space, so to speak. And when we're not living out of our created intent in that space, we're going to fall into depression, anxiety. So we may need to learn to set healthy boundaries or limits and be more articulate, more passionate, convincing, or whatever, to set boundaries and limits and say, and limit those people in your life that aren't really for you, you know? But get accurate feedback from people that are, you know, there to help guide you and that have your back and that are in there. Because a lot of times we resource ourselves with too many of those people that are negative doers who just don't get your dream and don't get that space. But you got to get in there and get resourced with the healthy people. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it sure does. And I like also what you said, how Robin Williams didn't waste his pain, and that gave his acting and his work such a depth and such a subtext. So I guess the art can be really a great form of therapy for us, huh?
It can be if we can really dig into some of those unconscious attachment wounds and patterns and trauma. You know, if there's a lot of people I know coming into this, they're dealing with their trauma and they're dealing with, you know, some really significant wounds from their family of origin. And you know, sometimes I get into this. I went into creative type because I really got really sophisticated at creating a fantasy world, you know, and it made sense to me. And that fantasy was really helpful for me to learn to escape abuse and trauma and getting beat up and all that stuff, you know. But when I stayed in that space, and then when I really wasn't able to get out of that dark night of souls because I was trying to, I couldn't find my escape and find meaning to all that. So we can find meaning. There's some really good programs out there that really help people really connect to this type of stuff, like the Artist's Way, some good groups out there to really dive into. Some of the churches out there have creative groups there that really support your creativity, that part of you, you know, that you may have disavowed or shamed or made like, oh, this is okay, I got to be a doer. But part of that is doers need to learn how to be a little better at doing, and doers need to be better at being, and just kind of finding that balance in some ways in our relationships and our task and our, you know, in our creativity. And I think that's really important. But you're right. The thing that, and I'm sitting here looking at Robin Williams' picture right now, he did not waste his pain. And this is one of the things that he said that I thought was such a profound quote. He says, "We all have a need for acceptance. You must trust that your own beliefs are unique, even though others may think them odd or unpopular, or the herd may go, well, that's bad. I want you to find your own walk right now, your own way of striving or pacing in any direction you want, whether it's proud or silly, anything." And that's the journey, I think, that Robin's inviting us into right now, even if it's our spiritual walk or creative walk or artist walk, to find that meaning. I know there's a lot of fear right now and a lot of shame and a lot of embarrassment, but let's find a way of restoring that, coming up with a new narrative to bring meaning to the pain that we're experiencing right now.
Well, thanks, Dr. Dona. Are you able to stay with us for the last 5 or 6 minutes or so? Because we have another call coming in. I'm not sure who it is, but let's see who we got here. This is line 2-323-485-3121. Welcome to the show. Who is this?
Hi, Richard. Scott Sayer.
Oh, Scott, welcome, Scott. This is a dear friend of mine, a creative writer and musician. And, Scott, I got your message. I don't know if you got my return call, but you were feeling the sadness yesterday like I was, and we also have Dr. Joe on the line. I appreciate you calling in, Scott. I don't know if you're working today or on lunch break or what's going on there, but would you share with us some of your feelings yesterday? Because I was very moved by your message that came in. In fact, it made me feel the need to, along with some of the other messages that came in, to do the show.
Yeah, thanks. I was driving when I heard the news, and I actually felt it as a physical, like, hit in the face or slap in the face. Just it hit physically, and I just immediately started to cry. And, on the highway, and I was unwilling to pull over, but I still was able to drive. So it was an immediate physical reaction. I remember a reaction something like that when I found out that John Lennon died in 1980. Yeah, so that's how it affected me at that point.
You really felt sad on a scale 1 to 10. How intense was the sadness at that moment, would you say?
9.5, maybe 10, I don't know. It wasn't just that Robin Williams had died, which is like really important and really incredibly sad. It's for me, I was in the 1980s, I awoke to having an incredible incredible ability to improvise and to do comedy, improvisational comedy. And that was really what he forged a way into, he and Jonathan Winters. And so when the news of his death arrived, it was like it brought home all of the joy and frustration and love and passion of having opened that part of my creativity.
Well, knowing you and loving you as I do, Scott, I know you're a very sensitive soul, and I think that as Dr. Joe and I have been talking a little bit about here, Joe Van Whitcomb, the sensitive soul, the artist that feels things intensely, and there's even some clinical data that those with this kind of improvisational mind are more vulnerable to these kind of depressive periods along with the manic periods. Would you feel that to be true as well, that the kind of the blessing and the curse, that it's a mixed bag to have the creative temperament, that we are more susceptible sometimes to these feelings?
Well, I not only have a creative temperament, but I'm bipolar 1.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe he was too.
There is a doctor on record saying that Robin Williams was bipolar. Uh-huh.
Yeah, and when I've had the manic phase and I fall into the depression, there seems no end to it. It appears as if everything in the universe is dark. And with a mind like his, which had an incredible associative power and a power of generation, I can only imagine when a mind like that turns against itself, it's devastating. And because it's really, for me, when my mind is in that space, all my creativity goes into finding ways of feeling bad.
It sure is a battle, isn't it? I call it my mental circus, that when my creative mind is turned inward, it's like this crazy circus, and it really takes... We're in our closing minutes, so I was thinking maybe, Dr. Joe, you could give a closing word on yourself and how people can reach you, and also, Scott, if you want to, after Dr. Joe, so a closing thought, and then I'll wrap up. How about you first, Dr. Joe?
Oh, thank you very much. Best way to contact me, and we're having dialogues about this, Facebook.com, Joe Vim, V-I-M, Whitcomb. And then I have on the Relationship Society on Facebook. And there you can find some helpful blogs and content and different things like that. We talk about everything from this to depression, relationships. So would love to see you there.
Well, thank you, Dr. Joe. I'm so grateful that you were able to call in at this, you know, quick moment with this tragedy and be there for people. And thank you so much. And Scott, how about your closing thoughts? And then maybe I'll wrap up the show since we're just down to our final minute here.
Well, if you, like Robin or myself, are bipolar, there's hope. There's drugs and treatment that can solve the problem, not on a permanent basis, but on a day-to-day basis. There's lots of organizations that are there to support you, and there's always light on the other side of darkness.
Yep.
Mm.
Amen. Yep.
Thank you so much, Scott. I love you, Scott, and I love you, Joe. You've both been just two guys in my life that are true brothers, true friends, and I'm eternally grateful for both of you. And for those of you listening, Dr. Joe mentioned a few things. The Artist Way is a great program. I've been practicing The Artist Way since 1998, and we have Artist Way groups through our ministry. If you're interested in our ministry to artists, I'll give you the website. It's Eternal Grace Church, E-T-E-R-N-A-L, Grace, G-R-A-C-E, church.com. And you can send a message if you want to be in, you know, one of our support groups for artists. You could email eternalgracechurch@yahoo.com. Well, we absolutely celebrate this wonderful genius, and I'm going to close with a poem I said at the beginning for those that turned in late. It's a poem that dedicated to Robin Williams, The Clown's Prayer. As I stumble through this life, help me to create more laughter than tears, dispense more cheer than gloom, and spread more cheer than despair. Never let me be so indifferent that I fail to see the wonder in the eyes of a small child or the twinkle in the eyes of the aged. And God, never let me forget my total effort is to cheer people, to make them happy, to help them forget momentarily all the unpleasantness in their lives. And in my final moment, Lord, may I hear you whisper to me, when you made my people laugh and smile, you made me smile. Thank you, Robin Williams. Thank you, thank you. We're eternally grateful for the way you made us smile. This is Richard Rossi signing off at Richard Rossi Live, and this link is good for you to share.